Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
Welcome to the program. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO, where I'm talking to two agencies about how they're moving out of the waterfall and into the Agile or DevOps methodology for IT projects. I begin the show talking with Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's CIO, and Elena Larson, the Chief of Staff for EPA's CIO.
One of the things about the data that was pulled from the IT dashboard is on the surface, it's pretty interesting, but pretty eye-opening. You know, some agencies take over 1,000, 1,500 days, and the average cost of a project, $75 million, $35 million. But there's more to it. EPA was on the lower end, obviously. EPA came in about 374 days, $1.7 million per project on average. Now, a project and a program, we know all the definitions. But let me start with Ann, just ask initial reaction to some of these numbers, and what does it tell you, generally speaking?
The biggest point it makes is that CPIC is designed for the world in which we used to work, right? So what you see in CPIC and what that aggregate number gives you is a mix of waterfall projects with long durations, agile projects with short durations, and things that are in O&M that may be listing a six-month or a year-long project. So rolling up that data, which is what is done with it on a regular basis, doesn't give you a true view of how the agency is actually doing its projects. And there have also been, as we've talked about before, some real incentives in CPIC in the past to put in fewer longer projects and to not put in development to focus on O&M because there's less work associated with that. So all those things together, I think, skew everybody's data to the longer duration and the larger value dollar value.
Does the fact that, for instance, let's just take EPA numbers because you obviously don't have control over anyone else's numbers, does 374 days as you looked at it, what is the numbers, at least the initial average duration, say to you from what you're doing or what you can do?
Well, like I said, I think most of what it says to me is that CPIC is not a great tool. Right. But beyond that, I think that it reflects that there's a lot of things defined as being in O&M. And yes, we do still have quite a bit of projects that are sitting in a waterfall world. We also have projects that are more agile that we're not doing the homework for to break them out the way we should because it simply is too hard to do in CPIC. So I it doesn't tell me a whole lot I didn't already know about my projects, to be honest.
Let me move over to Ellen for a sec because as both Chief of Staff, you get to hear probably and rattle the chains and say, why aren't we doing this better? But also you've obviously been around EPA for a while. Give me a sense from your perspective, the CPIC process, what's challenging about it when you've had to deal with CPIC, when you've looked at it, what pieces and parts have you said, well, that could be better or we could do better with that?
One of the things I would say about CPIC, it's not actually a project management process. It's an accountability process to OMB. And OMB uses it to try to drive some new behaviors in project management. So several years ago, they said, if you are in development, you know, make sure your projects are set up so that you are delivering new capability every 6 months. So people will structure projects to do that. But is that the real behavior we're trying to get? What we're trying to do now under FITARA and even some of the new CPIC development coming out of OMB is to really move to more agile delivery and processing. And so we need to make sure we're trying to drive that decision making and those practices under CPIC. So there are some new tables that are coming out in CPIC that instead of focusing on projects are trying to focus on releases with numbers of sprints and iterations in between. We haven't had a chance to test drive that yet. That's just come out this summer. But once we do, then we can see if that's really driving the behavior we want to see in the project.
And now these new tables and this change just came from OMB. So every agency is going through this new, if you will, release of CPIC, right?
Yes. I don't know if the agencies have adopted the new tables yet. They just came out this summer. We know we have projects that are trying to really make good faith efforts to move in an agile direction. Their material is still in the older tables.
And does the fact that OMB is recognizing that maybe CPIC is challenging and maybe doesn't reflect what's actually going on, does that give you that sense that that's part of the way that the government is taking on this new agile approach versus sticking with the old waterfall approach?
Yeah, I think it's encouraging that OMB recognized, and it's been over a year now, I think, since OMB really said, look, we need to change this. There was a CPIC summit last December. We had some folks there where we really looked at how can we change it. But CPIC, as Elena pointed out, is designed as an oversight mechanism. And so taking an oversight mechanism and trying to change it to match your new objectives is and drive new behaviors in the agency is not an easy process. And I think the new CPIC tables help, but we probably need to take a sort of a deeper look at what CPIC really is trying to accomplish and how we're going to achieve those objectives, because my perception, and it's an early perception because we're not really using them very much yet, is that it's still too cumbersome. There's still too much overhead for you to truly report an agile project in this process that you update monthly with a whole lot of information.
If CPIC is challenged, if for lack of a better word, if these numbers maybe are not maybe reflective of what's really going on, how do you as a CIO track your projects? How do you know that Project X has been around for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, a month, and it's costing me X amount of dollars? What's your process?
We do use the CPIC data, right? So the raw data the team's put into CPIC is valuable to us, but we have to take a look at what that means and dig into it pretty deeply to understand how that's going. We also have monthly reports that come up to me from every project where we look at how they're doing, what the risks are. And I shouldn't say every project, what I should say is every CPIC major, because obviously I can't look at every project in the agency, or that's all I would do with myself all month. But we look at all the CPIC majors. We build opportunities to look at all the CPIC projects into our annual reviews with each program team. And we're building some structures to look at smaller projects over time as well. And we've also tried to get the folks I've delegated authority to look at those projects in more detail. And obviously, if a project's having some problems, we're going to dig into it deeper.
One thing that OMB has done is really push these stat sessions, whether it's tech stat or portfolio stat. I'm not sure if Ellen or Ann, which one of you guys are the better to answer this, but is tech stat part of that process, or portfolio stat part of that process, to look at the cost, the schedule, the performance of the projects? I mean, are you guys using it?
Anne just made reference to annual reviews that we're doing with each of the programs, and these are actually portfolio reviews that we set up as part of our FITARA implementation, and we've shared the results of those with OMB, and we don't want to go to having to get to a tech stat. We want to find problems long before then, and so we've shared some of the corrective actions we've taken with a few of the projects with OMB, but what we do is we take a look at the cost, we take a look at their technical path forward, and we've also just reorganized ourselves so we have some digital services, consulting services available. And we actually have intervened in a few places and said, we need to take a new direction here. We need to look at a new technology for this, or we need to look at a new development methodology. But that's how we do it. We don't want to get to the tech stat and then recognize we have a problem.
It's interesting that tech stat is seen as when you have a problem versus that ongoing review, which is, I think, as you defined it, as portfolio review. Looking at the raw numbers, even if 374 days is maybe not as accurate, doesn't present the realism of what's happening. Do you get a sense of how many days an average project is, how much an average project costs? Do you have that data, Anne?
So I think average is a hard word, because we have, you know, three camps here, right? We have folks who are doing agile, right, where the average project duration is extremely short, but it varies even there. Are you calling your project one sprint, or are you calling your project 20 sprints, or how are you calculating that project length? Then you've got waterfall projects, some of which do still, you know, we're still working on them, we're still trying to improve them, we're having those conversations with people about how to do things differently, but some of them still have durations of 6 months to a year in between when they deliver functionality. And there are some things sometimes structurally that are difficult. When you're trying to modernize a legacy product, sometimes you can do some things that deliver capability, but that aren't useful to anybody yet. So it takes a long period of time before you actually give them something helpful. And then you've got stuff in O&M, right? So we have to look at each of those individually. And what we're really trying to do is drive things out of waterfall into agile, and then by default, we will drive our average duration down and then be very, very clear about what's truly O&M, because what's the reality is we have projects that said they were an O&M, and when you dig in, it's 80% O&M, but they actually are doing enhancements, and so we're trying to dig that out. And then eventually what you'll see is the projects are really just describe things where people are actively doing development, and then you'll be able to separate out the actual operations work in a different way. So that's what I hope we get from CPIC as well, is that ability to differentiate the types of projects.
It's interesting you bring up this idea that in O&M there's always DME going on. I think what happens too often is things are pushed into this black or white. You know, it's you're either O&M or you're either DME, but you're not you can't have both. And is that also reflected in how you measure the cost schedule performance type of data, meaning this is being spent on O&M, and like how are you differentiating?
We have the same problem, and I think you and I actually were on a panel a while ago where we talked about this. We had the same problem. It's easy in CPIC to report O&M, so as soon as someone goes live, they're 100% O&M. And we said, no, that's not what reality, and we need to understand what our true O&M costs are and what's truly development. And, you know, if you're doing enhancements, we want to know you're doing enhancements. We're not, I don't want anyone to make up enhancements and say, take money out of O&M just to make it look better. I want to know what we're truly spending on O&M and what we're truly spending on DME. And I don't think the number is amazingly good for what we're spending on DME, but I think it's better than we're giving ourselves credit for, because our structures have driven us to say everything's O&M. So that's a really important thing that we're making progress on. We've got more and more projects actually showing DME as we move into this next cycle.
The percentage has been something around, you know, 75-72% within government. Have you been surprised about the fact is some of these numbers, as you kind of dig into this a little bit, what you're finding? I mean, are you finding that maybe EPA is spending, instead of 70%, 65% or 60% on O&M, because as this, we'll call it shadow DME, kind of emerges?
We have not seen the number drop that much yet. Elena may have a number she can share with us if she's looked at it in more detail. I don't know. Those numbers are not worse, particularly than the private sector. So this is a place where we really beat up government. But you look at the private sector data, you look at what Gartner has, we're not doing any worse than the private sector, and we're doing a heck of a lot better than, you know, state and local government, for example.
We did take a big drive during our first round of portfolio reviews to really dig into that question, O&M versus DME, and we got a few percentage point shifts out of O&M into DME in our budget.
We have to take a break. My guests are Ang Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's CIO, and Elena Larson, the Chief of Staff for the EPA CIO. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guests are Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's CIO, and Elena Larson, the Chief of Staff for the EPA CIO. This is a special edition of Ask the CIO, where we're talking about moving out of the waterfall and into the Agile or DevOps methodology for IT projects.
I'm glad you brought up the private sector and state and local government. Do you get the sense that the private sector companies, but are they any better with this legacy versus new development, or do they track it differently? How would you compare the government's efforts versus the private sector efforts, just in terms of tracking mm-hmm. and understanding the differences?
Well, I certainly think that metrics and motivations are better aligned in the private sector, right? So the folks closer to the business are having a better opportunity to align the metrics. So I think that particularly cutting-edge companies have a better understanding of where they are than sometimes government organizations do, because we're really often people are just checking the box in the most expedient way possible. And sometimes it happens in the private sector, but there's more pressure to get it right. But what I would point out is we point to the Googles and the Facebooks, but they are not the vast majority of the private sector, right? So Google and Facebook, you know, may move fast on technology and have a lot less legacy technology debt because they're young companies and they're in the tech sector and they're moving fast and they're profitable, which makes it easier for them to move forward. But that reflects a tiny percent of the private sector, and most of the private sector has a tremendous amount of technology debt, has a lot of legacy systems, and is struggling nearly as much as the federal government is trying to figure all this out, and has similar percentages, right? So if you figure that, you know, the Googles of the world really drive down that O&M number, then look at that average for the private sector. Those other companies are driving that number up.
You bring up technology debt, and I think that's a fascinating discussion. What are you doing at EPA to address that issue of technology debt? We've talked about Agile. You guys, what's the status of your Agile, I guess, contract? Let's start there, okay, if you can. I know there's always some procurement sensitivities. And then what are you doing otherwise outside of that one contract to drive down that technology debt?
On the Agile contract, I think I can safely say that we actually have taken that contract out to GSA, to one of the regions. And so they're going to be putting that on the street for us. I don't know the specific date, so I can't tell you. But it's moving forward. I think we've got our IAA signed with them, and so that's going to happen pretty soon. In terms of how we're addressing technology debt in more general terms, there are two big initiatives, right? There's one that's focused on productivity and one that's focused on our enterprise mission systems. And the Enterprise for the Environment, which we've talked about before, and I won't get into great detail, part of what that will do is help resolve some of the technology debt issues as we replace these legacy systems with the Enterprise Portal, which is agile and modular, and will allow people to, number one, move into that system very easily, and number two, when they need to make a change, they're just going to change a module. So you get away from this painful process of I've got this huge intertangled legacy system and I've got to figure out how to do a big lift all at once. So that's the mission side. And then in the productivity side, and I think we've probably also talked about this at some time, we're getting rid of this monolithic pile of Lotus Notes applications, 22,000 plus of them. And so getting off of Lotus Notes is one thing, but we're trying to make sure that we don't proliferate lots and lots of new applications, and that what we do create, we build primarily on platforms. So we're using SharePoint. We're going out for a contract soon for a workflow solution that will either layer on top of SharePoint or that will be a separate solution. And so we're driving that work to platforms, but we're also looking at what we accumulate. So, for example, we just kicked off a review of SharePoint sites. So we're going to have, I think it's 25% this year that we review, and every year we review 25%, and we send a request out to the owners for some basic information that tells us, are they still using it, right? Is it adding value? Some things like that. So we can try and not build up this pile of stuff that we have right now, because in the private sector that's one thing, but in the public sector, all that pile of stuff also comes with records, right? And so dealing with the records now versus dealing with the records, say, in 5 years when the owners are gone is a very different solution. So
Ellen, let me turn to you a little bit as well. When you're working with people inside EPA mission areas or the IT areas, and you're trying to address the technology debt, do you see some innovation happening? Do you see some creativity coming out from the mission side? Or are they looking at the IT side and going, okay, what do we do? How do you help us?
It's really a mixed bag, because each project team has its own culture. There are some teams that are really looking forward to some of the new tools that are available to them, open source and other things to drive their cost. And there are some teams who are very comfortable with the way that they have done things. So those that have a more adventurous culture, obviously they come to the table a little sooner. Those who are a little more conservative, we have gone in and interposed ourselves enough to prove our point and show what we can do. And that has started to change some minds.
Ellen, do you see change happening because of the move from waterfall to agile? Do you see, if you will, that awful challenge of culture change? Is it happening within EPA?
We actually have found through our portfolio reviews that we have a few pockets of excellence in agile at EPA. And I'd like to give you an example of some of the success that drives change. We have one award-winning project, and I went to listen to the project manager speak about what she had to do to move that to an agile environment. And one of the things she said was, we had to get away from hard dates. Hard dates drive buggy code. The contractors will just code up to the deadline, and then there's no time to test. So what she chose to do is, instead of focusing on dates, I'm going to do 2 releases per year. I have a backlog that will help me, sketch out the scope. But my commitment is to 2 high-quality releases per year, free of bugs. They may or may not have all of the backlog in them, but when they are released, they work, and they're usable, and the users like them. And it was a hard sell for her, even with her own management chain, but she proved it. And the proof was in the pudding, and those are the things that we try to now show other people who, again, don't necessarily understand what agile is or why they should change.
That was actually my question. Where is that culture change happening? Otherwise, you're starting to see some impact from her project and just this new idea. I mean, are projects starting, as Ann said, she'd like to see more projects move to agile, and some are still stuck in that waterfall area. But are you starting to see that change happen more broadly?
We're starting to see it in the requests for assistance. So one of the things that we've set up is a fellowship program so that we can bring real experts in user-focused development into the agency and embed them into projects so that they sort of become the yeast. And people are coming and asking for these fellows. I don't know that we're bringing them on as fast as we're getting requests for them.
And just offer a little bit more about the fellowship program. How new is it? How many people are you looking at? Are they already within EPA that you're bringing in, or are they outside of EPA? Give me a sense.
Yeah, so the fellowship program, you know, this is something that we started working on when Greg was here. So it's been a long-term activity that we've been going after. And we signed the MOU, I think, in the spring with GSA, and that's been moving forward. We're actually looking at not just GSA, but other channels to hire people. But these are limited-term feds primarily coming in from outside the government to fill these jobs. I think we have six of them right now, either on board or in the hiring process. And we could probably place 50 of them in the agency if we could hire that many. So, you know, the goal is eventually that this becomes actually a service to our working capital funds so that there's not a headcount concern. Folks just have to come up with the money to pay for these folks. And, you know, they can be on board anywhere from a couple of years to 4 years. And obviously they're term limited, but they have the right to compete for jobs at the end. So we hope that some of those folks will actually decide to stick around. But we also hope that some of them won't, not because we don't like them, but because we want to continually bring in new blood. So we don't want to bring in, say, 50 fellows, have those same 50 here forever. We want constant new blood, new ideas, so that we can continue to stay on the edge of practices.
We have to take a break. My guests are Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's CIO, and Elena Larson, the Chief of Staff for the EPA CIO. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. In the next two segments of the show, we hear from Steve Cooper, the Commerce Department CIO, on how he is helping his agency modernize its IT project development processes.
This data in and of itself is pretty dramatic, right? You look at Commerce Department as an example and say 1,000 days is the average duration for a program, and average cost is $18.3 million per program. When you looked at the data and the way we put together the data, do you feel like that the 1,000 days is accurate, is not accurate?
My initial reaction to the data, Jason, kind of works like this. Since I'd not actually seen, you know, a comparative set of data against the CIO IT dashboard, I admit to you, I wasn't actually going out on a regular basis and necessarily looking at or comparing commerce to other federal agencies. You know, my focus has been more internal to dramatically improve our own metrics, our own performance, our own reliability to achieve always operational excellence in support of our missions. But here's kind of the initial reaction. First of all, I'm looking, and if I look at the days of average duration, what I'm pretty sure this reflects are, in the IT dashboard, major investments. Okay, when you guys pulled this together, did you do it across both major and non-major investments, or was it primarily major investments?
So this was the data feeds, and I'll tell you this. Someone did this for me. I didn't do this on my own.
Okay.
But I try to explain it, how it worked, and basically download the project, quote-unquote, project data for all agencies, deleted any projects that were completed before 2016 or had a completion date before 2016, and then broke them down, and then subtracted the start date from the completion date to get the duration, and then summed up the duration and cost for each agency, and then divided the duration by the cost and number of projects to identify the average.
Yeah. Okay.
So I think this is both major
and kind of the approach you took is not, I mean, it's a common sense, reasonable approach. And I think it tells us this. First of all, what's reflected, and I'm speaking now for commerce, what's reflected in all of the data that sits in the CIO scorecard are mostly, with a couple exceptions, they are mostly multi-year large investments. They're complex. Some, as you know, if you looked at the scorecard, we've got a lot of yellow and a few red. You know, most of our stuff is not green. Doesn't mean it's wasting taxpayer dollars. Please don't let your listeners walk away with that impression. What it means is that if something is yellow or red in the scorecard, it means it's behind its original plan schedule, or there is a budget variance of plus or minus some percent. We usually use between 5% and 10%. So it could also indicate that we're under budget in some cases. And what that means is that often is there are delays in getting certain acquisitions in place or contracts in place. But having said that, that 1,000 days kind of translates to, well, you know, 2.5 years, something like that, which then is what I'm basing my statement. These are multi-year major initiatives, large, complex, and they're challenging. If I look at the average cost, the interesting thing is that's a lower average cost than I would have expected to see for commerce most of the stuff we've got in the IT scorecard. So that doesn't mean that you did any calculation wrong. It just means that's a smaller number that I would have expected on average cost. Now, here's what I mean by that so we can kind of discuss that further if you want to. The average cost using that little algorithm that you explained to me does make common sense. But we typically will not list on our IT scorecard what we think of as small investments or small projects. And those typically are investments that are under $10 million in total lifecycle cost. Look at the difference. That, you know, $18 million and $10 million is a relatively small difference. Most of the investments that are reflected on the CIO IT scorecard for commerce reflect investments and initiatives, programs that typically exceed $75 to $100 million in lifecycle costs. Those that lifecycle can vary, but if you roughly use 5 years as a time frame, so you can do some quick math, you and I on the phone, what we can come out with is, all right, so if it's $100 million, 5 years, that would be about $20 million a year, and the $18 million is even below that. And we've got a number of initiatives that across their life cycle will represent hundreds of millions of dollars. Let me give you an easy one coming out of the Department of Commerce. The decennial 2020 census. That's billions of dollars. Billions with a B. So, and that's in there. That program is in there. So there's something in the numbers that I think doesn't fully reflect a true situation. Doesn't mean you did your math wrong or anything like that. It just means there's something that is different than what I would have expected to say. Does that make sense?
It does. And again, I think on the surface, the numbers, I agree with you, don't tell the full story. But what I think what it does explain a little bit is if you have a program that's averaging 1,000 days, and the decennial census is not your typical program. So
right.
Maybe even if you remove that from the discussion point for a second and look at other programs that are taking this long, you know, how do you manage the risk over 5 years? How do you, for instance, Steve, when you have a program that's so long, how do you ensure the projects that are under that program are meeting your needs? Because you, on the traditional waterfall approach with a 5-year program, you're saying we want our end result in 5 years to be this. And knows better than I do that everything changes in 5 years. You can't think today what technology you'll be using in 5 years from now.
Absolutely.
So that's a big concern that I see just on the raw numbers.
Absolutely. And your question is on target. You're asking the right question. So here's how I would respond. And this is what we're trying to do at Commerce. If we wait, for example, to measure something a year or 2 years or 3 years into a program, we're not going to come out in any kind of good shape from anybody's perspective, including Congress. What we are pushing very hard across all of our programs, projects, and initiatives at Commerce is shorter duration between both measurement and the delivery of tangible value as defined by the customer. In this case, the customer is the recipient of delivered functionality of the program, the project, or the initiative. By shortening that duration, and what we are pushing very hard is literally incremental development, agile, if you want to use that term, of inside smaller duration of 6 months or less, we actually want to see and review with the customer on about an every 4 to 6 week basis, how are we doing? And we is the development team, or if it's commercial software, which is what we try to use in most cases, if we can do that, it's configured and functional delivery of some kind of function, capability, requirement, need, something like that. So by doing two things, shortening the duration of formal measurement and review to 6 months or less, and then within the 6 months or less, we want a checkpoint, meaning we really want to sit down, the development team and the customer, every 4 to 6 weeks on average to see, is this what you said you wanted? Here it is. Here, you know, we can actually, we've got tools now, development platforms that we're using, where we can actually show the customer, okay, here's what's coded, here's what's been done, here's the functionality, take a look at it. You can actually do a little bit of usability testing, but I don't want to confuse that with formal customer user acceptance testing. But hopefully you get the idea of we're shortening and increasing the visibility of what's being developed, how quickly customers get to take a look at it to determine, is this on track or not?
We have to take a break. My guest is Steve Cooper, the Commerce Department's CIO. I'm Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Jason Miller. My guest is Steve Cooper, the Commerce Department's CIO, and we're talking about how he's helping his agency modernize its IT project development processes. Talk to me a little bit more about that 6 month formal review, that 4 to 6 week on average, kind of midterm review. How many projects is that happening for? How are you changing the culture to get people used to saying, okay, we're going to have those gates, if you will?
We're applying it to as many as we can as it makes good operational and business sense. Let me clarify those words. And let me use some real examples. The Bureau Inside Commerce that has been going at agile methodology and incremental development the longest is our Patent and Trademark Office. John Owens, who's their CIO, and his team have done a superb job. They've been at it, however, for about 6.5, almost 7 years. So they've gone through a lot of learning, a lot of refining, a lot of adjustment. What John does on a very formal and very regular basis, and I'm going to use OMB terminology, John conducts tech stats, operational program reviews, on all of his in-motion programs on a very regular basis. Now, the regular basis varies a little bit. Oftentimes, they may be every month. They literally may be every month if it is what we call a troubled program. Now, troubled is just a label. I don't want anybody to panic. It means that the program is most likely yellow. It doesn't mean that it's really, 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 you know, in big, huge trouble. It means that there's something that isn't running exactly the way that everybody would like it to run. Now, the closer the program is to red, or if it is red, then that's that monthly frequency. It may be quarterly for a yellow program, and frankly, it will be 6 months for a green program. So the frequency of formal operational programmatic review is adjusted based upon the health of the program. And again, the goal is the same. The shorter duration when you're taking a good hard look at what's going on means that the program really can't get significantly off track over a longer period of time. Now, ideally, and John's team is far enough along where, see, they begin to implement what I've just described to you at the initiation of all new programs, because they've got a very robust program, a set of guidelines, documentation. They've grown their maturity around this very, very well. The Census Bureau is another example. They've been doing this well for a shorter period of time. Not as long as PTO has been doing it, but they've now been using agile methodologies, iterative development, program reviews, formal and informal, on a very regular basis, again, with the same goal. Shorten the duration of milestones, checkpoints, decision gates, reviews, such that you will detect as early as possible when a program or project begins to go off track. That could be schedule, that could be functionality, it could be whatever triggers what off track means. Likewise, our Bureau of Economic Analysis, which is one of our smaller bureaus, Brian Callahan, their CIO, has done a superb job with his team. Now, they don't have as many things going on. They're a much smaller bureau. But in their mission-critical space, they've done a very, very good job of introducing and leveraging shorter-duration program and project reviews to ensure that they catch something before it goes, my phrase, off track. Other bureaus are adopting as quickly as they can across their full portfolio what I'm describing. Now, you will have a mix at the present time. If we looked across the Department of Commerce full portfolio of all IT projects, you'll see many that are using the methodology and approach that I just described to you. But we have some, they're older, they may be legacy, they may not lend themselves well to changing or adapting as quickly to an iterative methodology. But wherever and whenever we can, the CIO community is in unanimous agreement to move in this direction.
Those are great examples. I know I've talked to John Owens before for my Ask the CIO program, and you know he's described that those efforts well. Is this, do you get a sense, making a difference? Are you seeing, you know, when you take part in the tech stat sessions, that whether John runs it or another bureau runs it, or that you run at the headquarters level, do you see that this culture is changing? That so when we, if we would look at this data in a year and 2 years from now, maybe the average duration would go from 1,000 to 500 days to maybe even 100 days? I mean, do you get a sense that that's happening across commerce?
Yes, but let me offer two ways of how this might play out. One of the things that we've been working both within commerce and with OMB, with Tony Scott in his office, I think everybody has begun to recognize that the metrics that actually are the metrics that we all are supposed to use in the IT, in the CIO IT scorecard, are still geared toward waterfall development, waterfall methodology. Therefore, they don't lend themselves well to PTO or the Census Bureau or BEA, who are already using Agile methodologies. And so what we're trying to do in commerce, but also in concert with other departments, other CIOs, and with Tony's office, is to revise those metrics. When you revise the metrics and actually build the metrics around Agile development, I think you'll see two things right away. First of all, the average duration will immediately dramatically decrease because you're not really trying to measure from inception of investment to first production. That's what the duration measures today. And if it's going to take me 3 years or 4 years or 5 years to get to full functionality using the metrics in the scorecard today, then I don't know, unless we change the metrics, I'm not certain we'll see the average duration come down dramatically, because the metrics themselves aren't reflecting iterative development. So hopefully the metrics will be revised, in which case what we really want to measure, I think, is the duration between delivery of value. At least this is what I'm pushing for. And then have another different set of metrics that measures the program or project itself. So we end up with something around productivity versus the time from initial conception and launch of the project to all of the functionality that we want to deliver. I think we've got to make that change. Otherwise, I just am not convinced that the average duration metric is going to come down. I do think that the average cost will come down regardless of whether we change the metrics or not, because the real value out of what we're learning in commerce right away is, when we discover something that might go wrong or has gone wrong early, then we save. We absolutely save money in the time it takes to correct it. Okay? In other words, if I wait a year before I find, we made a mistake and we're off track, it's going to take me a lot more money and a lot more time to correct whatever it is that I discovered, if I'm a year into it versus 3 months into it. So by catching things earlier, we actually are saving taxpayer dollars and we're reducing the full cost of the program every time we catch something early.
And of course, you're also reducing your risk, which is both related to that cost and the money issues.
And one of the things that we're also doing in commerce, albeit not across our entire portfolio yet, CIOs as a community and their teams are pretty good at understanding release management. Release management is simply just a formal name given to, hey, look, if you have 100 requirements that you want me as the CIO and my team to develop for you, well, I could say, okay, well, it's going to take us 2 years to put all 100 requirements into the program for you, and at the end of 2 years, you're going to have your 100 requirements. And that's assuming, by the way, that during the 2 years, you don't add any new requirements, which, of course, we know you're going to do. All right, so instead, here's what we're doing. We're saying, look, Jason, give me the top 25 that are the most important that you have of your 100 requirements. Give me the top 25, and I'm going to deliver those to you in 3 months or 4 months. All right. Then what I'm going to do is I'm going to take your next 25, and I'm going to do a new release. Then I'm going to take your third set of 25. Now, it's, you know, the 25 is just a made-up number. The 100 is a made-up number. But it's the concept of release management that becomes important. Instead of building a program and beginning the program and saying, hey, this program is not done until we've delivered all 100 of your requirements, change the mindset. We're going to shift it, and we're going to say, look, what you really want is you want an initial release of your most important requirements. We're going to give you that in 4 months. It's only going to cost X. We're going to measure every month. We're going to measure along there so that the likelihood that we're going to deliver the 25 requirements that you want on time and on budget goes up dramatically. The risk is lowered because we're going to do a check every 30 days of those 4 months to make sure we're on track and that you're getting what you want. Then when we finish those 25, we put a big check mark. We've spent taxpayer dollars wisely. Maybe we've come in under budget and a little bit ahead of schedule, and now we go after your next set of prioritized requirements. Iterative development is reinforcing release management. It's kind of saying we're going to chunk up these 100 into something manageable, shorter duration, lower risk, wiser spend of taxpayer dollars, and higher probability across the board that we will, on a continuous basis, deliver on time, on budget, the value that you're looking for.
That's all the time we have for today. You just heard from Steve Cooper, the Commerce Department's CIO. Earlier in the show, you heard from Ann Duncan, the Environmental Protection Agency's CIO, and Elena Larson, the Chief of Staff for the EPA CIO. For more on this topic of how agencies are moving out of waterfall and into Agile or DevOps, check out our exclusive data on federalnewsradio.com and search Ask the CIO.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.